Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
To another edition of the Red Reporter Podcast. I'm your host, BK, and alongside me this week, we have, as always, it's a Red Reporter only show, so we have Wick Terrell and Eric Roseberry alongside me this week. How's it going, guys?
That's going great. I found out immediately after the end of the game today that I got out of jury duty tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, so regardless of how bad the game looked on TV... My day was fantastic, based purely on that point.
It's the best opening day ever for you.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I had chalked up tomorrow to a complete loss and no baseball to come home to. And to call in and find out that my number was just outside their range, I was like, woohoo, it's a victory.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm good. I'm doing better than Scott Feldman. So get into it.
Yeah, we will. So, and just for anyone wanting some background on this episode, we're recording on opening day. Just kind of an opening day post game show, if there ever was one, which is not something we'll probably do a ton of this year. But you know, with the special occasion and it being on our normal Monday recording schedule, we just happen to all be in a recording mood and to get some post-game takes for this opening day and to kind of talk about how we got here over the last week or so. So, you know, I know when we last had our full podcast, we recorded with C. Trent Rosecrans, and which, by the way, was a great episode. We're going to have Trent on again as soon as we can, I think, because he absolutely knocked it out of the park. I think we could have gone another as I think we said on the episode, we could have gone another hour with him.
Yeah, I could have listened to him wax on the Reds and the last 10 years of the Reds
on just baseball in general. I mean, we were kind of talking on that episode about there were still some decisions to be made and there was still a couple of places that were up in the air. We weren't really sure what the rotation was going to do, so. You know, we have the answers to those now. Now that it's already opening day, we've had the answers to those. So, I guess we can start with the Reds' biggest kind of acquisition in that span. Scooter Gennett, who, you know, as NL Central baseball fans know, you know, a longtime Milwaukee Brewer, the guy who had been with that team for, I believe, you know, 7 or 8 years at this point. I think he'd been there for, he was the second longest tenured member of the team, I think, behind Ryan Braun. And they decided to put him on waivers and the Reds picked him up and he'll be on their bench here to start the season. So let's just kind of get an instant reaction to the Reds picking up Scooter Gennett.
Instant reaction from my end. I thought it was a great claim, really. I mean, he's making $2.5 million this year. They'll have team control of him over next year too, I believe, which means that it was basically a no-cost bench signing. And if you look at what the Reds have given to guys who have been on their bench in years past, the Skip Schumachers and the Jack Hanahans and Miguel Cairos of the world, cost-wise, it looks like it'll be about that much. But Scooter's, you know, a decade younger than most of those guys were when they were brought in to be bench bats for the Reds. And obviously I feel like he's got a much better track record and has faced a lot of the same pitchers that the Reds are going to be playing this year because he's done it in the NL Central with the Brewers. So I think that was a great pickup. My lone qualm was the fact that they chose to basically cut Desmond Jennings to bring him in. I feel like those are two guys for the same reasons that we just talked about why Scooter would be good for a bench bat role for the Reds right now. I feel like Desmond Jennings is almost the perfect complement of that as a right-handed bat. So that was the part that frustrated me a little bit. But it's, of course, kind of the end result of the Reds wanting to keep more pitchers on the active roster because so much is up in the air on both the rotation and the bullpen. But bringing in Scooter in a vacuum – I think it was a very shrewd move. I mean, he's got, obviously he showed today he's on pace to hit 162 home runs this year, which would be a record. But not just the opposite field home run aside, he's hit very well in Great American Ballpark in his history, and he's the kind of guy who can be a versatile infielder if, say, Dilson Herrera doesn't hit great in AAA this year or his shoulder continues to be bulky. And they want to start trying to market Zach Cozart because he's in the last year of his contract. Gannett's the perfect kind of guy who you can still fit into that infield dynamic with Jose Peraza, move some guys around, and still have some really good options. So I like it. I think it was the right kind of move to be making.
I don't have anything to add to that Scooter Gannett analysis, so it sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's pretty much about – I think the main thing to touch on there that I want to emphasize is that, you know, I think it's a good depth signing, especially when you're expecting to get rid of Zach Cozart at some point. I think it makes him makes that pill a little bit easier to swallow, to where you don't have to bring Dilson Herrera up at that point if you want to get rid of Zach Cozart sooner rather than later. You know, if somebody has an opening in at the end of April for Zach Cozart, you can jump on it because you know that you have Scooter Gannett ready to run in the second base spot, and you can move Peraza over to short real quick. So, yeah, I think that's it's a shrewd move. I think that it's the kind of thing where I don't think that he's going to be hurting for at-bats in this Red lineup. I think that, you know, he'll probably start a handful of days a week, you know, when, you know, if Peraza doesn't start, or if, you know, Zach Cozart needs a day off, or if one of the outfielders needs a day off, one of those other guys can, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of rotation with these Reds bench players, just given kind of how spring training went and how especially the outfielders, how, you know, Schebler might not play every single day. He might be more of a platoon bat, same with Duvall, so... I think Scooter will get a shot, and I think that we won't lose too much by bringing him in and letting him take the reins a little bit. So,
yeah, and I feel like he's actually moved around the diamond a little bit in spring training this year because the Brewers are kind of looking to find ways to get him into the lineup as well. Right. So while he's played primarily second base in his career, I think the fact that the Reds claimed him and he'd been experimenting at those positions with the Brewers, I think it's pretty clear that the Reds are willing to see if he can move around and play a little third base. I know he got some time there, like the last, or either the Futures game or the last spring training game. I think they got him some time at third base. But I think the fact is, you know, you look how weak the Reds bench was last year, hitting zero pinch hit home runs. Gannett's not exactly a power bat off the bench, but he's a guy who's a competent guy who's still relatively in his prime age, who's been a big league regular and gotten plenty of at-bats. I think that's the right kind of person you want to have as your 300 and 350 PA guy who can get starts around the diamond. And so, yeah, I think it was a pretty shrewd pickup because you look up at the Reds bench right now, when he kind of instantly became the most dependable bat on the bench immediately after they claimed him. And for $2.5 million, that's a pretty good gamble.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what you think of Pat Kivlahan, that's pretty much it, right?
I have high hopes for Kivlahan, but at 27 years old with 24 career big league plate appearances, it's hope at that point. At least with Scooter, you get like at least a little bit of known quantity. So,
yep. So, and going on to the next, basically the next big news of the Reds roster is kind of how the rotations shake out. It looks like, you know, Scott Feldman started today. Brandon Finnegan will go on Wednesday. And then you have Amir Garrett, Ricky Davis, and probably Bronson Arroyo rounding out the rotation. I think it's safe to say that I don't think any of us saw this five rotation coming out of when spring training started. Is that safe to say?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say. I mean, I think there was some expectation maybe one of the younger guys would get an opportunity. And then I expected him to throw like a Tim Edelman in or somebody just to eat innings to buy some time. But yeah, I mean, they're willing to roll the dice with Garrett and Davis. And I mean, you know, we've talked about on here before, Garrett's a little older than somebody typically in his spot. So I'm fine with that. And I have no clue what to expect from the Bronson Arroyo 2017 experience. So it should be a wild ride.
Yeah. I look at the last year specifically and see that Robert Stevenson started, what, like the third or fourth game of the season, which essentially means he started the year in the opening day rotation, whether he was actually up there on day one or not. I get the impression that the reactions that we have to the roster construction on day one this year are going to be a little bit overblown once we find out what they do with Arroyo. I fully anticipate that when Arroyo gets called up to start probably the first game in St. Louis, you'll see Rookie Davis or Amir Garrett or Robert Stevenson or Cody Reed sent back down to AAA, just because that's the move that makes sense. So despite the fact that the Reds chose to bring all four of those guys up on day one, two of whom have not had any big league experience at all in starting their clocks, you know, the reason that we're not freaking out about Robert Stevenson's service time at this point now, based on what happened last year, is because they managed to manipulate it well enough down after the fact. So I think he'll come up and they'll end up kind of sorting out the bullpen and the fifth starter role well enough now to where ultimately by the time May 1st rolls around, it won't matter anymore. But I do think it was interesting that the Reds chose to put all those young guys on to start because they're very good friends. I think that's the one thing that kind of came out of spring training that I took notice of, was the fact that like a lot of those guys live together, Sal Romano included. And spent a lot of time not just like competing with each other, but actually like being friends and rooting for each other too. So I wonder if there's some sort of team building MO surrounding this and putting them up on the big league roster and letting them experience the opening day, despite the fact that there's probably going to be enough of a shuffle that comes out in the next 2 weeks or so to where they're not all still there, almost as a taste or a teaser to see how they react to it and to give them a glimpse into what could be if they go down and perform well enough in Louisville. But coming back to Amir Garrett, though, which is something I've written about a couple times so far this spring, he's going to be 25. This is technically his age 25 season based on how they grade things and in roster tracking. He's on his second option because he came up and got put on the 40-man roster a little bit before everybody else because of his basketball playing days. I think he's a guy who legitimately has a chance to just take a rotation spot and run with it. He's a little bit older than the other guys and a little bit less polished potentially, but I think his stuff plays really, really well, and I'm excited as heck to see what he can do this season.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, I think that of the unproven kind of younger guys, I think that Garrett probably had a leg up just because of that age and, you know, getting – you want to know what you have in Amir Garrett, you know, before he gets to a certain point. And, yeah, you might have a little bit more time with a Rookie Davis or a Sal Romano or someone like that. But, yeah, I think Davis probably surprised me a little bit more in that, you know, really he won that spot basically from – Robert Stevenson and Cody Reed, who were, you know, last year at this time, we were talking about those two as, you know, 1A and 1B on the Reds prospect list. You know, both of them kind of got a taste of big league ball last year and kind of had some jitter problems and kind of had some nervousness to where it's kind of telling that, you know, Brian Price and Dick Williams don't feel comfortable putting either of those two in the rotation to start the year. Now, I guess we've kind of heard that maybe Cody Reed might end up starting really soon. I don't know exactly how that all went down, but you know, it's interesting that it got to a point where Rickie Davis is like announced as, hey, you're the fourth starter for this team coming out of spring training.
Yeah. With Rookie, I think he's the, he's in such a weird prospect position as is. I mean, obviously he came over in the Aroldis Chapman trade that brought in three other guys that, you know, you hope you can get a utility role out of a couple of them, and Caleb Cotham's already gone. And Davis came over as a guy who technically was like the highest rated of everybody in the Yankee system. And immediately started throwing 89 to 90 miles an hour on his fastball last year. And everybody's like, well, what the hell? And then it turns out, not only did the Yankees farm system not be good when he came over, but then the Yankees traded everybody and now have the most stock farm system, or one of the most stock farm systems in baseball. And Davis is coming off a year where everybody kind of lost track of him because he was, his fastball disappeared and he had good results, but not great results. And then he's coming out this year and apparently had a leg injury last year that was just sapping his ability to kind of push off. And his fastball is 4 to 5 miles an hour faster at this point in time than it was for most of all of last year. So it's almost like he's a completely different pitcher now than he was when the Reds got him. He's the pitcher that probably was accurately rated in the Yankee system before this leg injury kind of sapped that a little bit. And he was just overlooked long enough for most people to kind of write him off. And then he comes out this spring and shows, hey, this is what I can really be. And he's the one last real chance for the Reds to kind of salvage that Aroldis Chapman trade from a saving face perspective. And it's interesting that they give him a shot from day one to kind of take the, you know, the reins and run with it at the big league level.
I was going to bring that up. Do you guys think there's any, and I don't think they'd make a decision solely based on this, but any pressure on the team to get as much as possible out of Davis, just to show or prove in some way the Chapman trade wasn't the bust fans assume it was?
Yeah, I don't know. I could definitely see that angle. And I think that, you know, if the Reds felt like that was the case, then that would be the way that they would take it. But, you know, I can't imagine a big league club making decisions like that. I hope that the Reds aren't, you know, taking it that personally to an extent. But, you know, I think that there could be some pressure on the Reds front office, but I think that from what we've seen from Rookie Davis, I don't think that it's completely far-fetched to see him in the rotation. Like it would be if, you know, if they would have come out last year out of spring training and been like, okay, Rookie, you're our guy. Like I would have been like, that's obviously, that doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I think that, you know, he's kind of proven himself to pitch well enough in spring this year that I think that he's deserving of a shot, and I'm glad that the Reds like it. But yeah, I could see that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great, when you asked it, I immediately knew where you were going with that because it popped in my head kind of as I was talking way through that too. It was like, wait, well, you know, this, he is kind of the one last chance aside from Tony Rinda, or, you know, if he can, you know, finally crack a spot in the rotation and suddenly be the Red second baseman, which I don't really foresee happening at all. It's interesting to think about that, but I hope not. I feel like with Jose Peraza, they kind of have to, because he was obviously much higher rated than Rookie Davis coming in, and rumors surfaced that they had Aroldis Chapman traded for him initially. Then they went back and traded Todd Frazier for him. So I feel like Peraza is the kind of guy who's got that pressure on him because the Reds kind of played their hand as showing how much they wanted him for anybody. But with Davis, I feel like he gets a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt. And, you know, if Reed had showed better in big league time last year, and if Stevenson had showed better in big league time last year and in AAA, and Davis had still made the roster this year, maybe I could see a little bit more of the argument for that. But I think it's almost the Reds endorsing him and saying, look, you know, these other guys have been higher rated than you, but they haven't exactly taken the job from you. We'll give you the chance based on what you've shown us here and now, and go with it. And I think I'm okay with that. I don't feel like there's too much weight on his shoulders because of that trade. Because if anything, the other guys are carrying the prospect status on top of their shoulders, which probably has just as much weight in terms of disappointed Reds fans at the moment as Davis being the, you know, the quote unquote centerpiece of the Aroldis Chapman return.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think the one important thing that you pointed out was that, yeah, I don't know if it's as much of an endorsement of Davis as much as it's an indictment of Robert Stevenson and Cody Reed, in that it's basically the organization saying, hey, you guys, we know that you guys are, you know, blue chip prospects, and, you know, you guys are, were rated really highly on prospect lists, but hey, you guys got big league time last year and you didn't take advantage of it. So yeah, I think that it's going to be up to those two to, especially Stevenson, to kind of prove that he belongs there a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, especially, you know, towards the end of the year, we didn't really see the kind of maturation that you would hope to see from those, both of those guys. And, you know, I think when you have these, you know, I think you expect some growing pains when you have rookie starting pitchers, and you expect, you know, hey, you're not having a great outing, and it just kind of unravels and gets away from you a little bit. But, you know, if you're going to be part of this rotation, and especially like this year, next year, maybe the year before that, or the year after that, you're going to need to be able to kind of take your lumps and eat some innings a little bit, because if you can't go three or four innings, you're not going to have a spot on this team, because this team can't do anything with you. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I think that, you know, if Davis can keep his composure as he's making this jump, I think that it's very likely that he could stick around and we could see a lot more of him.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if anything, that might echo the fact that the Reds front office kind of agrees with that sentiment. The fact that Tim Adelman didn't get included on the big league roster is that mop up, multi inning, you know, if a reliever has to come in early into a game kind of guy, which at his age and given his, you know, his history in the minors, kind of suggests that's what he would be had he made the opening day roster. It's almost like the Reds are saying, hey guys, we're not bringing in that guy to just save your butt that, you know, can come in and help clean up the mess. It's just on you. Like, somebody go out there and show us, now that you've made the big league roster, that you can go out there and get us 5-6 innings and do it. And I think that's an interesting way of going about things. But, you know, Brian Price is a former pitching coach. And I think if anything suggests the reason why the Reds chose to carry that many more pitchers than bench bats to start the season, it's to make sure he's got hands-on ability to work with them, not just during the games, but during warm-ups, after the games, you know, showing up at the ballpark at 11 o'clock, all of that stuff is, you know, at the big league level to kind of help carry that along and at least get his eyes on how all of these guys take to that. And, you know, it's not the kind of thing that you really have to break down and analyze for a team that's got a lot of established veterans and is looking to win 95 games a year. But where the Reds are in this rebuild, I think it's kind of vital to have Price with them as often as they possibly can be to start the season, to see how he can help mold these guys. And I think that's probably what this is.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's just kind of touch on today's game. The Reds lost to the Phillies 4-3. You had Scott Feldman have a less than stellar debut, I guess is how we'll put it. You know, Scooter Gennett hit a two-run bomb in the ninth to kind of get the Reds closer than it was for the whole game. But, you know, what do you guys think of Feldman's performance as in his first start and in his first opening day start with the Reds?
Yeah, I think if Cincinnati could have drawn up their worst possible scenario, it would be Scott Feldman giving up a home run to the first batter of the game. and all the 2016 right. feelings came rushing back to me. But he just, I mean, there were parts of the telecast and I didn't hear it followed up on, but I don't know if he was uncomfortable or just having trouble, but he called the trainer out and Price out and yeah, right. just didn't seem personally like he was as sharp as he had hoped to be today.
Yeah, you know, I think ultimately if you told me that Scott Feldman was going to yield 3 earned runs and 4.2 innings pitched and it was going to take him 99 pitches to get through 4.2 innings, yeah, I think that's the reason why the Reds were able to sign Scott Feldman late in the winter after trading Dan Straley for, what, $2 million at a base salary with plus incentives. I think that's kind of, you know, when you sign that guy, that's what you're hoping to get out of your fourth or fifth starter. The Reds paid the market price to bring in a guy of that caliber with that experience. Unfortunately for the Reds, though, the way things broke, that turned out to be the guy that they wanted to count on most for opening day. So I think it's less an indictment about how Scott Feldman is in his, what, age 33, 34 season, and more about the indictment that the Reds had to basically roll him out there for day one. Because as far as I'm concerned, yeah, he gave up a leadoff home run to Cesar Hernandez, and Freddie Galvis eventually touched him up. Those are two guys who, based on their scouting reports, aren't going to hit a whole lot of home runs. He threw meatballs to him, not anticipating them hitting home runs. You look at the middle of the order, he threw a lot of breaking pitches to him. He got a lot of guys out because that's what he knew he had to do. I think he chose to challenge guys that ended up tagging him for home runs into the, you know, the first five rows of the right field in Great American Ballpark, which a lot of guys have done before. So ultimately speaking, I think if you can get 5 innings of 3-run ball out of Scott Feldman while you're trying to buy time and sort out the rest of the young starters for the Cincinnati Reds, that's kind of what they were hoping for. Although I guarantee if you ask the Reds in December what they were hoping for opening day, they'd be like, oh, Homer Bailey's going to throw 7 innings, or Anthony Scafani's going to strike out 9 and 6 1/3, and then Raisel Iglesias is going to come over. So I don't think it's as bad a view on what Scott Feldman can provide as much as it is kind of an indictment of where everybody else in the rotation currently is. Either way, did it generate a whole lot of excitement in the land of the Cincinnati Reds? Absolutely freaking not. And it was kind of the most boring interpretation of what the weather was in Cincinnati today as physically possible.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, I was at the game and it was – The pitching performance was about as cloudy as the weather was just generally. And it was, you know, yeah, just kind of a, obviously going to opening day is always a good time and it's always an exciting time to be in Cincinnati, but right. Just kind of, it's that overarching feeling of like blah going on the whole day. And then alongside that, the pitching performance, which, you know, yeah, some of the stuff I was overhearing in the stands was pretty comical when Scott Feldman took the mound as the Reds opening day starter. Yeah. Like, who is this guy? Where did they find this guy? Yeah. And then obviously even picking up after he gave up the leadoff home run after being ahead in the count. I think he was ahead, you know, 1-2 in the count.
He started off with 2 straight strikes, and I made a flippant comment on Twitter about, oh, based on the first 2 pitches of the game, looks like Scott Feldman's ready to go. What a great signing.
That looked good, and then I remember that very vividly. Just remember seeing a couple of, you know, kind of iffy calls, like, oh, the ballpark didn't like that that ball 2 call. The ballpark didn't like the ball 3 call, and then the next one's over the fence, and here we go.
Eric,
you said it best. It's kind of a microcosm of Cincinnati Reds baseball from last year, and just kind of carrying over into this season too. So,
but if there was one takeaway from today's game, and obviously it was a Phillies lineup, which is not a juggernaut of a lineup by any stretch of the imagination, but the bullpen came in and, if Scott Schebler makes a catch on a ball that basically was hit right at him off the opposing pitcher's bat, which ended up going for an RBI triple, the bullpen goes 4 1/3 without allowing a run. And, you know,
that, one run.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If Scheffler makes that catch on the hit, the triple that went right at him off Jeremy Hellickson's bat, that was the lone run allowed by the bullpen. And if you look at Blake Wood and Michael Lorenzen and Drew Storen and Raisel Iglesias, Barrett Ashton getting out of a jam earlier too. If the bullpen continues to act like it did towards the end of last season when they had everybody healthy, which in large part that's what it showed today, I think that it is at least one positive development you could take out of it, which is, hey, they've got a lot of talented arms down there. If you can, if the soft tossing 88 to 90 mile an hour guy can get over to the fifth inning, the Reds do have a lot of options to close out games. And I think today was, obviously you wanted to be in better situation by the time you got to that point. But the guys at the back end of that pitching staff look like they do actually have the chops to make that less of a, oh God, everything's going to go to hell when they come in there moment, like it was all of last year. So that's my one positive takeaway from the pitching staff today.
Right. But yeah, I think, and to kind of play devil's advocate there, I don't know how I feel about, you know, the Reds being down 3 runs in a game and Brian Price actually using 3 of your 4 kind of closer-y guys in Storen, Lorenzen, and Iglesias. You know, I think that, yeah, if that's his go-to move in a game that, yeah, obviously you want to keep it close, but it's not, you know, it's not a tie ball game. It's not a game where you're up 1 or 2 runs. Yeah, I'm kind of curious how many innings we're going to be putting on Lorenzen and Iglesias' arms by the time the season ends here, because it could end up being a long season for those two.
Well, he said he might use them both 100 innings, and we are well on our way if this is a sign of things to come.
Yeah, that is absolutely backing up that statement.
Yeah, and I also wonder if that's also a kind of a reflection on the fact that, you know, what we talked about previously, which is that Cody Reed and Robert Stevenson and or Rookie Davis are all technically in the bullpen, yet none of them saw innings today, despite the fact that the starter didn't make it out of the fifth inning. So if those guys who are, you know, groomed as starters and in theory could be multiple inning arms, yet didn't even get in on a day where there was, you know, they were behind 3 runs and weren't trying to protect the lead. In theory, that's when you'd expect a long man to come in, and the long man never came in. So maybe they are getting those guys some big league experience and time more for dugout and bullpen, spit and flower seeds and shooting the shit, pardon my French, for a couple innings for a week and a half, 2 weeks to start the season. And when Bronson Arroyo is back and when they really start shaking things down, when the off days die down, those guys are going to go back and hope they learn something. And I think that might be kind of an indication that we're getting that, hey, they're brought up more for the experience at this point than they are to actually eat innings early on in the season.
Well, and I guess I'll go and say with that, we have absolutely overanalyzed the heck out of one game of the 2017 Red season. So
we've figured out Brian Price in one day, in 25 minutes.
Yeah. So yeah, 161 to go at this point. So
podcast after each one, right?
Yeah, they're gonna win one. It's gonna happen.
The post game show. Oh, can you imagine us after a win? That's a good mood. But yeah, I think with that, we're gonna keep this one short and sweet. So if there's anything either of you guys want to add.
I'm excited to see Brandon Finnegan get a start on Wednesday. I know you guys who are actually going to the game, the Red Reporter Game 2 adding are similar news, and I'm jealous to not be there. But I am excited to see what Brandon Finnegan can do as taking the step forward, considering as much as the rotation has kind of fallen down and been reset around him, he is the one guy who actually pitched pretty well last year, who is in the Reds rotation to start this year. And he got overlooked for the game one start, but I think he might. He's always kind of seemed like a guy who's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and him getting the nod in the first night game of the year on game two. I'm interested to see him come out and see if he grits his teeth a little bit and throws rocks. So
yeah, it'll be fun. If anybody, I am assuming it will not be too difficult to get a ticket to Game 2 Reds versus Phillies. So, yeah, come on out. Join us.
Yeah, for sure.
Actually, there. Yeah, I still have tickets.
Yeah, call, available. Call for, BK if this posts before we afternoon.
Yeah, if we get this up quickly enough, shoot me a tweet or an email or something, because we can get you to the game if you haven't want to go. So
at the Musketeer, and you can have a full on Red Reporter experience. Yes.
Oh man, don't subject me to that. But yeah. I'm just hoping that Eric and I get to actually watch some baseball on Wednesday, because I've been looking at weather forecasts, and it looks as bad as today looked, which we ended up lucking out weather wise. Yeah, Wednesday looks 10 times as bad. So hopefully we won't have the firmest Red Reporter tradition, and that's some kind of rain delay or cancellation, because that's. It's definitely happened a couple of times so far in game two. So
yeah,
we're obviously looking forward to that. That's always such a good time, and looking forward to seeing everybody out at the ball yard. So we'll keep an eye out for that. We'll have an eyewitness report hopefully next week of some baseball that we got to watch. And let's wrap it up. So make sure to visit us online at Red Reporter. On Twitter, redreporter.com on your interwebs, and we'll talk to you next time.
Go Reds. They're my favorite team.
See you guys.